The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for August 26th, 2017. As we approach fall, we're going to take a trip up to Michigan to speak with the proprietor of a bed and breakfast that takes sustainability and cyclists to heart. In fact, it is in heart. Heart, Michigan, that is. Patrice Martin and her husband, Alan, did their due diligence before retiring and learned not only how to run a B&B, but how to attract cyclists as well as other outdoors people with their lovely bedroom spaces, their three-course gourmet breakfasts, and the amenities that they provide. Located just 3 blocks from the Hart Montague Rail Trail, the first rail trail in Michigan, the Hart House Bed and Breakfast might just be a bucket list destination. We'll find out more in a moment. This week saw another series of crashes resulting in fatalities in several states, and the interwebs, as my friend Patrick O'Grady always says, lit up like a Christmas tree with comments. One of the most perplexing things about these horrific incidents is the number of drivers who flee the scenes. It is beyond me how anyone could hit someone and drive away. One of those crashes occurred near Boston, the 7th in the state this year. After our break, Mass Bike's executive director and my go-to guy for the long perspective on a variety of cycling topics, from transportation and legislation to cyclocross and race announcing, is Richard Fries. This week, I catch up with Richard, where he's taking a few days out on the West Coast preparing for a best buddies ride. He's calling it a vacation of sorts, but I think his wife just wanted him to take a break. Richard and I cover the gamut from the crash that took a popular 54-year-old woman's life this week to the KMC Crossfest that will be held in Thompson, Connecticut in September, as well as expound on a variety of other cycling-related topics. So if you are ready for a trip to pure Michigan, let's meet Patrice Martin from the Hart House B&B. Hi, Patrice. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So you and your husband decided to renovate an old house and open it as what sounds like a gorgeous bed and breakfast in Michigan.
Yes, we did. We had, as a post-retirement from our existing jobs, the desire to become bed and breakfast owners. And we had joined associations, gone to several conferences, learning, basically doing due diligence to understand what it was we were looking to get into. So we had done all of that, and the next thing that was left was to find the house. But we weren't looking. So we always say that the house actually found us. And it was love at first sight.
You know, my husband and I have often talked about, wow, you know, a bed and breakfast for cyclists. Wouldn't that be cool? Well, you did it. That's so cool.
Thank you. Well, we have a lot of friends who are cyclists, and they're the ones who schooled us on what was necessary in order for us to be attractive to and to take care of the specific needs of cyclists. So we listen to them, and that's what we have.
So tell us first where in Michigan Hart, Michigan is.
All right. Yes, because most people look at us very quizzically when we say we're in Hart. So Hart is on the west coast of Michigan, between Ludington and Muskegon. And we are about 6 miles inland from Lake Michigan as the crow flies and about 10 miles on the road.
Okay. And if you could characterize the climate, is it – so I'm in Northeast Ohio in Cleveland, so we have a four-season climate – probably just like you do. Is it colder, warmer? Is it, what would you say about it?
Well, being so close to the lake, we definitely experience lake effect. But, you know, we pretty much experience the same type of weather that Chicago does. So we know, for example, if Chicago's getting hit with a big snowstorm or thunderstorms or whatever, we're next. Unless it breaks up over the lake.
Right, right.
So,
yeah, we have Lake Erie.
So
I imagine it's very similar. So tell us a little bit about the history of Hart House. It wasn't always called Hart House.
No, it actually was built in 1904 by the Bates family. And it was George and Estelle Moore Bates. And George built the house for his wife as a way to help console her in her grief because she had just... in December of 1903, lost a significant number of her family members to the Iroquois Theater fire in Chicago.
Oh, my.
So, he built this house as a way to help her deal with her grief over the loss of several of her family members, including her father.
Wow. What an interesting story. How many rooms are available in the house? So you renovated it. It's beautiful. People can actually see it online at harthousebedandbreakfast.com. How many rooms do you make available? And some of them are actually almost like suites.
Yes, the rooms themselves are quite large. We were very fortunate that the house, the original footprint of the house was largely intact. It hadn't been broken up into a multifamily or anything like that. So the rooms are quite spacious. We do have four, what we refer to as chambers, because that's what they were called on the original blueprints, and two suites. So we have 6 rooms total.
And how many people, say somebody said, oh, I'm going to take over the whole house. How many people could you accommodate at any one time?
The total number of people we could accommodate is 14. All the rooms are double occupancy with the exception of the third floor suite, which can accommodate 4.
Nice.
So we can house 14 people.
Mm-hmm. Nice, nice. Yes, the suites are beautiful. I mean, as soon as somebody clicks on it, they're going to say, what a cute house. But I mean, it's not cute. It's huge. But anyway. So I did spend time looking at your website. And you talk a lot about sustainability products like your robes and some of your other things. I think most of my listeners would like that. Tell us what kinds of sustainability things you've done with this house.
One of the very first things we did when we purchased the home was to replace the windows. They were to have energy efficiency because the house was not insulated. The windows were wooden frame, single pane, not all of them original at all, but certainly not energy efficient. So we insulated the house, we replaced the roof, we did the windows, all of the lighting is LED. We replaced 2 inefficient water heaters with on-demand water heaters. We have 3 of those. And then when we purchase products, we do prefer to find products that are going to be energy efficient or are sustainable and certainly recyclable. So, for example, our linens and our towels are from the Comfy Company, and they are synthetics, but they are created specifically to be a recyclable and to last 2 to 3 times longer than standard linens. And also dry more quickly. So so that we're not using as much energy when we are doing the laundry.
So I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Patrice Martin. She is one of the proprietors of the Hart House Bed and Breakfast in Hart, Michigan. We're going to talk about cycling in 1 second, but a very important part to cyclists is food. And so I was looking at your breakfasts, which are remarkable, to say the least, and a lot of the comments on your site talk about your breakfast. Tell us a little bit about what you've done to accommodate people who are both gluten intolerant or are looking for a specific diet. What is cloud bread?
Okay, so cloud bread is a bread that is primarily, it's egg whites. It's made primarily with egg whites. And you can make it savory or sweet. But I also have Ezekiel bread, which is a gluten-free brand that my gluten-free guests do enjoy a lot. But what because it's very important to me, meals are very important to me. I could talk for hours about food. I'm a little crazy like that. But so one of the questions we ask when people make reservations, either online or on the phone, is if they have any food limitations or restrictions. And then I go to work. I consider it a challenge to create memorable meals that accommodate specific food limitations like gluten-free or dairy-free and or vegetarian or vegan. And to date, all of our guests have been very pleased with the meals that I've provided them. And we're so lucky to be in Oceana County, which is abundant with fresh local produce. During the growing season, they grow everything. So it's sequential. We start with asparagus, and then it's strawberries, and then it's blackberries, and then blueberries, and apricots, and peaches, and tomatoes, and sweet corn. And I go a little crazy.
But wait, you're only serving breakfast, right, Patrice?
Right, I am. But I incorporate all of those into, because it's a three-course meal. So I am able to either incorporate it into the pastry course or the fruit course or the entree itself.
Well, I guess we need to talk about the cycling part because all cyclists ride to eat. So we've got the eating part taken care of, at least in the morning.
Yes.
One of the tell us what some of the things are at the Hart House that you do for cyclists, and then we'll talk a little bit about the trail that runs very close to the Hart House.
So again, we took the advice of our cyclist friends and created an in-house storage room. So we carved out a specific space, which is in the basement, but the house is 3.5 stories. So to get into that lower level area, it is half a story. So very wide staircase with very short steps. So it's not hard to get down. And then we installed a rail so people can ride their bike, run their bike up the rail to get up the stairs.
I learned the word for that. It's called a runnel.
A runnel. Okay. Thank you.
And I just learned it recently. You would think after all these years in cycling, I would know that. But no, they did that at the Boston Innovation and Design Center where they're holding the Builder's Ball next month. And I was talking to the guy who's doing the ball and he said, oh, yeah, they put runnels in. I'm like, what a cool word. Well, that's really,
that
really
cool
good.
Word.
Really good. So you can accommodate if all your guests brought bicycles, you could accommodate all of them?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Cool.
We have hooks and there's plenty of floor space. And then we also have a park bike repair rack. We have an emergency toolkit, emergency cyclist toolkit, and we also have patches. And we have an electric pump and a manual pump. So pretty much what you would need to care for your bike while you're here. And and guests are also certainly welcome to hose their bike down outside. I've got a bucket full of rags and towels for both the cyclists and the cyclists.
So tell us a little bit about the trail that runs by. Mm-hmm. How close is it? It's the Hart Montague Bike Trail of Oceana County. So I imagine Hart is in Oceana County.
Yes, we are actually in the middle of the county. So,
mm-hmm.
The first section of paved trail is three blocks from the inn.
Oh, that's easy.
So you would, exactly. You turn left, and then three blocks, and it's on Water Street, which is how you access the trail, runs along the river. So it's not a very well traveled by car road. So even though it's three blocks of surface road, it's very safe and very wide and very easy to then get on the paved trail.
And is the trail, so it is paved, it's 22 and a half miles long. I take it that's out and then 22 and a half miles back?
That is correct.
So it's 45 miles. That's great. And what could mm-hmm. they see along the trail? I know they could look this up. Is it a regular Rails to Trails rail trail?
It is. It is actually the first one in Michigan.
Nice.
It was the first Rails to Trail, yep. And it was just repaved last year. So they added, they made accommodations for additional drainage to make it last longer. Along the trail itself, there are seven points which have parking, restrooms, and water. And there are multiple things to stop and see and stop and do along the trail, including a trailside bike repair shack.
Why not? I like that.
Why not?
So are you open year-round?
We are open year-round.
And you're there year-round?
We are. And, well, we're
what happened
we're
to vacation, Patrice?
Well, no, there's a little trick we learned from B&B owners is that when you do need time off, you just go to your reservation system and you put it in that you're full.
Okay, we won't tell. That's a great trick. Of course, it makes perfect sense, right? Well, why don't you tell our listeners how to find out more about you and how to, if they're interested, to book a room?
Okay, well, our website is the best way. And again, that is all one word, hearthousebedandbreakfast.com. And heart is H-A-R-T. And or they can call. And our number is 231-301-8221. We're always happy to answer questions, to talk about the area, talk about other things to do in the area. And again, to have that all important conversation about food.
Yes, of course. Of course. Well, thank you so much for talking with me about the Heart Bed and Breakfast, about the Heart Montague Trail. And I wish you a lot of luck. I think it's a really cool thing. I wish I had the nerve to go do it. But I think I'll just enjoy yours instead. Maybe we'll come up and see you. Thanks so much.
Yes. Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Take care. All right. And bye-bye. Patrice Martin joined me from the Heart House Bed and Breakfast in Heart, Michigan. For more information, log on to hearthousebedandbreakfast.com. Before we take a break, I'd like to just mention one news item, the removal of the bike share station from the grounds of the White House this past week. Now, I really don't want to get into a political poop storm, but how petty can you be? The Capital Bike Share program in Washington, D.C. is one of the most successful in the country, and the 9 bikes stationed at the White House were evidently quietly ripped out without any prior warning. I have a couple of excerpts, one from the Daily Cause and the other from Bicycle Retailer. Let's start with the one from the Daily Cause. The station was removed earlier this week at the Trump administration's request. District Department of Transportation spokesperson Terry Owens tells Washingtonian. Owens adds that the station was installed in 2010 at the request of the Obama administration, which had a favorable record with the cycling community. The Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery, or TIGER, grant program in the 2009 Stimulus Act funded bike infrastructure programs throughout the United States, including the installation of several bike lanes and cycling paths around Washington. Before former President Barack Obama left office in January, his transportation department signed off on new regulations redefining traffic as people who move on roads rather than strictly vehicles, a change considered to be a coup for cyclists and pedestrians. Then Bicycle Retailer posted the following. The North American Bike Share Association said it is frustrated by a decision to remove a Capital bike share station from the White House grounds last week. NABSA's executive director, Samantha Hare, said, last week, President Trump removed the Capitol bike share station that was located inside the White House. The 9-bike station, which the Obama administration had installed in 2010, was a way for White House employees to get to the White House and to move about the grounds without a car. This comes after the administration's proposed budget called for the defunding of several bicycling programs, including the Tiger program, which has traditionally developed and improved access to a variety of transportation options, most notably for bike commuting. Hare referred to People for Bikes' statement in May that Trump's proposed budget was, quote, a bad deal for bikes, end quote. The North American Bike Share Association joins People for Bikes in expressing our frustration and the lack of consideration for alternative transportation options throughout the U.S. We know that investing in projects that encourage the use of bikes for all people is imperative to the advancement of healthy cities and our nation, and it will remain the focus of the North American Bike Share Association. Without further comment from me, let's take a break. We'll come back to speak with Mass Bike Executive Director Richard Fries. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
Heading out to California to speak with Mass Bike's Richard Fries. Hello, Richard. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. It's been quite the spring and summer so far. We need to catch up.
It's almost over. I mean,
I know. How did that happen?
I don't know. I think it's age.
You mean because time is going so fast?
Yeah, I just think that it becomes a smaller and smaller fraction of your life.
All right. What are you doing on the West Coast?
I'm really happy to report that my wife is actually happy that I'm doing this. I've been under a lot of stress, and I'm doing a Best Buddies training camp. So I'm taking 2 days off, and I'm going to help get a lot of people ready for the Best Buddies First Castle Ride. I'm embarrassed to tell you, I am at the Four Seasons in Thousand Oaks, California, and it's pretty swanky. I'm surprised they let me in.
Why are you embarrassed to tell me that? You deserve it. Come on.
Yeah, I kind of do. This is like the first time in my life I still say I do deserve this. But it's really something I like doing. I like taking novices. And, you know, I'm not the greatest cyclist in the world, but I like teaching. And sometimes, it's not all about heart rates and wattage and stuff. People need to learn a lot more basics. And it's really enjoyable. But we'll see how I do. I'm going to need this training camp to get ready for the Best Buddies ride on September 9th. So
tell our listeners about Best Buddies. We've talked about it before, but I'm not sure I remember the whole spiel. What is it?
Well, Best Buddies was a charity started by Anthony Kennedy Shriver, the son of Eunice Shriver. And she, of course, founded Special Olympics. And that was done in Anthony's backyard when Anthony was a youngster. He looked out and said, this is great fun, Mom, for all these kids with intellectual disabilities and, you know, assorted issues that affect not only the kids but also their families. And he said, what do they do now when they go home? And Eunice was like, we don't know. So he went out while he was in his dorm room back in Georgetown back in the 80s. He started this program that is sort of a jobs placement, vocational placement, and really just a big social connectivity network for these kids with moderate to severe intellectual disabilities. That it sounds really, really, really simple, but it's in hundreds of nations. It's in all 50 states, and it's one of my favorite things because we have 3 big charity rides to raise funds for this program. But it really emulates what it is to be a great cyclist. Really, cycling is one of the only sports that I know of that a stronger rider and a more experienced rider can help a less experienced or weaker rider actually on the road. I can't help you hit the golf ball.
That's true.
You don't want that. But I could nudge you, and I could teach you how to draft off me. I could, you know, I can really get a beginner to do great things. So, and that's very much the ethos of Best Buddies. You know, a stronger person can help a weaker person. So real simple, but it's really an effective and wonderful program.
So when will you be heading back to Massachusetts?
Oh, I'm on a red eye Sunday night.
Okay.
So all this, whatever fitness I get will be destroyed in an airport and an overnight flight.
Did you have a chance to see the eclipse this week?
Partially.
Okay.
Just in Boston. I'm regretful of that. I got my work-life balance is a little bit off kilter right now. Maybe I'll get to the next one in 2024, I think it is.
You could come to Cleveland. We're going to get 100% here. Totality, as they call it.
Air mattresses at your place.
You've got your own space, you know. So okay. let's talk a little bit about what's going on with Mass Bike. It's been a really tough year. Six, I think, fatalities this year?
Yeah, I just had a seventh.
Seventh. Oh, nice.
It was, which is actually, we're not over the top on that rate. But it really is interesting, Diane, is that there, even though we did have a really tragic one with a really high profile and a lot of media attention, because A, it was right downtown Boston, B, it had a hit and run component, and C, it really had a large, the ghost bike vigil and everything was massive. I mean, helicopter coverage on the media was that big. And then you turn around and we lost a middle school teacher last week, Nancy Ann Bronder, in Hopkinton, the same town where the Boston Marathon starts. And it was almost accidentally did I find out about it. You know, the little local news media, I can't fault them. They just ran the obit because she died about 14 days after the crash. And of course, no charges filed, driver's not held. They used the term accident. This was a woman that had ridden all over the place, was doing everything apparently right, a middle school teacher. But they have one of the things, with the exception of the Rick Archer death in the city, almost all of the deaths we're finding are in the suburbs, people in their 50s that are doing everything right. So this, you know, this stuff about reflective clothing and helmets and, you know, ride on the right side of the road and do all that, these were not renegade people. I think five of the seven were people in that category. So we really have to look at what we're doing.
And so what are we doing? What is it that needs to change, that you think needs to change, and that where can we affect some change?
Yeah, I think that we have to, you know, we really need to stop thinking. At the Places for Bike Conference, and I'll send you a photo of the slide, you know, helmets, reflective stuff, all the stuff that we've been preaching, trying to do everything right. I still encourage people, especially if you're going to do so in America with our car culture and our, you know, our asteroid belt design, you know, we still have to do these things. But they are the least effective at really reducing the number of crashes and fatalities. It's really some protected infrastructure, better enforcement, stuff that we talk about all the time. It's really the cars that we have to control.
Do you believe that it needs to start with the person getting his or her driver's license for the first time?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're successful there in getting, we've got one question on our test in Massachusetts now. That's a big accomplishment. You know, and the question comes out of a tumbler of possible questions. So you can't teach to the tests, but there's five questions about impaired driving. There's one about bicycles on the road, which we're really proud of. But a lot of states, you know, they don't really have it. So I think it starts with licensing and examination and education, driver's education, in my opinion. We should even eliminate the word. We should just talk about transportation literacy.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
You know, we know that 70% of the 18-year-old kids in America don't have driver's licenses.
Interesting.
So maybe we should teach them how to use subways and transit, trains and planes and Uber and Lyft and stuff like that.
Yeah, my husband believes that self-driving cars are going to take a big chunk out of these issues. I'm hoping he's right in a way, but I think it's a long way off.
Long way off, and you're still going to have matters of space, and you're still going to have matters of sustainability. You're still going to have matters of parking and fueling, and you know, and but it's going to be an improvement if you ask me, especially when you start with freight, which is a major problem. You know, large vehicles present a really big hazard in a lot of communities, and they present the largest hazard to motorists. A pretty high number of the people trip on our highways is when it involves a collision with a large vehicle, and that's where I think you're going to see the most cost effective and application of autonomous vehicles.
So what is on your plate with Mass Bike for the rest of this year and any new agendas from next year? Ha 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 ha.
It's funny because I gotta be honest with you, Diane. I first off, I have zero self-esteem, and so I ride home every night thinking, I didn't get anything done today. And it's this mantra I chant. But we started to produce this executive director's summary for what we do at Mass Bike. And I have a great team with Lauren LeClaire, Tom Francis, a pretty good board, and some good support staff. But and they all work really hard, good teachers, Sean Condon. But we write these reports, and we started sending them to donors. And they're like 4 pages long of all the stuff we do every month. And I'm like, wow. It's hard to believe. So what are we doing right now? We're trying to get our Omnibike bill passed, which has a lot of great things in it, ranging from camera enforcement to hands-free components. But then we also have the one that I am most, I'm most keen to see, if not passed and really debated, is a uniform crash protocol component, whereas when a police officer finds a bicycle or a pedestrian, you know, that's down, the priority should not be let's get traffic moving again. The priority should be let's make sure this investigation is handled right. And let's assume that the only person that gets to tell their side of the story oftentimes is the motorist, because the other person's in an ICU.
Right.
You know, especially with pedestrians, where we're seeing a really big uptick in their fatality rate. So very much like you had sexual assault, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, you would have a wide range of attitudes and lenses through which the law enforcement or the courts viewed such incidents. We view that now. We have some real serious issues with, we're looking really closely right now through the Anita Kerman case, which was the Swift surgeon, brilliant surgeon that was hit and killed by a truck in August of 2015. And we're gleaning through some FOIA requests, through the police reporting on it, before it gets to the DA to decide if there's adjudication, to make sure that they don't look at this through the traditional lens of what the hell are you doing on a bike. One thing we are very concerned about is a misinterpretation of law, and I'm going to get a little bit deep for your listeners here, deeper than I should probably go. But, you know, basically, turning a turn signal on does not absolve a person of the responsibility of the vehicle.
Right.
Say they have the turn signal on, doesn't mean that you can hit somebody. To say I pulled the gun out and waved it around doesn't mean you can shoot the gun, let it fire off accidentally. So the biggest issue we have right now, Diane, and this is something that I think all bike advocates, there should be a unified front, is that we should be working towards the adoption of presumed liability. And I think you and I have spoken of this, where when the police officer shows up at the scene, the liability should presume to lie with the heavier vehicle. We do it the opposite. But a lot of this has to do, and here's the deep end, is that how laws are sort of done in America as opposed to Europe. Whereas in Europe, they look to the law to say, what does the law state? And in America, we look to what's called common law. And this is my loose interpretation of it, where we look for what did the court say? and you have to have precedent. You have to see how the courts decided something rather than what the law states. This sounds really arcane, but it's really at the nub of all the great bike policy. It's one of the most important things we can do, we need some big court cases.
Yeah, and then we need to set new precedent. I totally understand that. I absolutely understand that. Because once those cases start to fall in line with the presumed liability that you're talking about thinking, other cases will follow. But so it takes one. Has there been a case like that yet?
Not that I know of. This would be a great thing for a Bob Mionski or an Andrew Fisher to discuss with you. I would love to see it. I think there was one in Utah that was interesting. Forgive me, you're catching me on the fly here, but there was an interesting case in Utah recently. It's very rare that you have a driver that's charged if they don't leave the scene and they're not impaired. If you don't leave the scene or you're not drunk, and typically the reason you leave the scene is because you are drunk.
Right, or loaded or whatever it is, you know, high on something, sure.
But it's interesting. We're starting to finally see some cases where cell phone usage is being brought in. There was a case with some pedestrians just recently where a driver was charged on Cape Cod. And I'm talking like 2 weeks ago where the driver, they were able to look at the phone. And it's really hard to do that. And it's every law, it's every state, it's different laws regarding distracted driving. If you are not impaired and you are you don't leave the scene, I'm having a hard time finding a case where they've charged the driver in a vehicular homicide or something like that in the death of a cyclist.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Mass Bike Director Richard Fries. I don't want to really leave this subject, but I want to move on to one thing that's really important.
Sometimes I hate talking about that.
I know. I love it and I hate it. It's one of those we love to hate that or we hate to love that.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
Okay, we're back. Richard, I need you to put a different hat on.
Uh-oh.
KMC CrossFest.
Boy, yeah, it's like giving birth to a giraffe.
That's a good analogy.
It hurts.
All right. Well, let go of the pain for a second. I'll give you some painkillers here and tell us about the event this year.
Well, we're coming up on, September has really become the American Cyclocross Month internationally with the World Cup. Having been in Las Vegas, now they'll go back to Iowa for the second edition of the World Cup in Iowa. Then we have the World Cup in Waterloo, Wisconsin this year. And we are right after that in a UCI Category 1 at the Thompson Speedway. We've moved out of Providence. We've got to wait for it. It's coming up, but we also have a Grand Fondo. And I'm about to announce that we're opening up our very exclusive Champions Dinner to the general public, but we're also going to use that right on site. We have a great restaurant on site. I have a great venue. It's expensive as all get out, but it's got restaurants and bars and kid tracks, and it's built to host a lot of people, so we're looking forward to it, and hopefully it won't rain. But our dinner is what we're really excited about, because we used to reinvigorate what we used to call the Woolly Mammoth, so we're going to induct. There is no pure cyclocross racing in the U.S. Bicycling Hall of Fame. So we're going to recognize some of those people. We've tried to do it in the past with during the national championships. It's just too much going on. So we're going to own that. So we're excited. We're going to induct about four people. That announcement will be coming out.
Oh, good.
And we're going to have a really cool clothing manufacturer that's going to help us with some gifts for that. It'll be a great buffet with about 220 people that can get tickets to it. The Grand Fondo is coming back with a lot more fanfare. But the other thing is that we're running the biggest race of the weekend and the opening series of the U.S. Cup, the Show Air U.S. Cup cyclocross series, which is new, another new national series. Hopefully we'll have success there. We are the opening round, and we're running it like just because. And Diane, I know you're from Ohio, and I'm from Pennsylvania. And when I moved here, the thought of high school football on Saturday afternoons was appalling to me, because how do you get into a good fist fight on Saturday afternoon? So we're going Friday night lights. So the elites are going to race Friday night.
I love it.
We have this whole it's going to be really really good. And I will say that I think we are probably, from my walkthrough, maybe the most technically challenging course in North America.
Yeah, it'll you posted that.
The UCI riders will be very, very, very... there's a few, let me call them pucker moments on our course. The amateurs will have an easier course, but even for the amateurs, it'll be challenging.
Wow, that's really cool. I'm so glad to see that it's gotten so big and so interesting. Talk to me a second about sponsorship, because that's why a lot of events die.
In the crapper. It's in the crapper right now. It's horrible.
Well, you've got KMC, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a great sponsor in KMC, Cliff Bar. Cannondale just signed on. We're holding our own. But I got to be honest with you, you know, in 2016, Shimano, which is also supporting us, Shimano announced 18%, an 18% drop-off in their sales
right.
to Shimano America.
Right.
And if that's Shimano, that means some of the smaller brands are seeing 30, 40, 50%. So there's some real hardships going on in the bike industry. And I think that... It's just rippled through the events. It's rippled through the teams. It's rippled through advocacy. It's rippled through what the industry can and can't do, which is really too bad. Because what's really sad, and this is another tangent, but we're probably having more people ride bikes than ever. So I think there's a curiosity going on, like what gives. I think online retail. I think we're just adjusting to online retail.
So can I play devil's advocate for a second?
Sure.
Why do we keep looking at the industry for sponsorship? Because the industry has never, ever gotten its act together in the 43 years I've been in it.
I think the industry gives, I think they give broadly, and I think they struggle. I think they're, I totally agree with you. But I think that when you go into mainstream, if you're talking insurance, if you're talking automotive, if you're talking, you know, freight and delivery, and you look at who buys advertising on, you know, let's just say mainstream sports, you're dealing with automotive, insurance, UPS, FedEx, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let's just walk right through it. You know, there's a Lance Armstrong effect. There's a Liberty Seguros effect. That was Liberty Mutual. And I believe that the automotives, they're spread all over. They're spread pretty thin. So I just think there's still a hurt factor from the Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, that's too bad, because it's time for that to just go away.
Yeah. I mean, the only golfer most people know is Tiger Woods. The only cyclist people know is Lance Armstrong for right now.
So you're saying we need a couple new heroes.
We need a couple new heroes. But the one thing I will say is there is an adoption of bike culture. I really believe that advocacy and junior development is really where we need to, it's where USA Cycling needs to embrace those components of if they're going to be looked at as something. Because if your mandate is go win the Tour de France and everything will be fine, well, we tried that
right.
didn't work.
Yeah, but what if your mandate is to win the KMC CrossFest or to win?
Well, yeah, and that's a matter of us building our fan base up.
That's true.
And I think that we're dealing, and this goes back to something, and I'll be brutally honest, and I think if you look at USA Cycling, road racing is flat. Mountain bike racing went up 10%. Grand Fondos went up about 97%.
And cyclocross has just been going strong.
Yep. But the problem is, Diane, is that we're running out of 42-year-old white males.
True.
Because they are now 52-year-old white males. And the hipsters and the millennials are riding for lifestyle. That's great. But we really, really, really need, and this is me, and my I'm basing this largely on anecdotal stuff. We really need, I think the most important company right now in the bike industry is, I have a lot of respect for John Burke at Trek. Mike's in here at Specialized. Pat Kinnane at Funky's doing amazing things. But I think the company that's hurting the most is might be the most important, and that's the Doral Group, which owns Cannondale, largely because they took all those large box brands. And they put Schlin into the big box stores. And
right.
This may not appeal to your audience, what I'm about to say, but I think Schwinn might be the most important bike brand in America if we could start to develop a product that could be a gateway drug for people that can't afford a, $5,000 full suspension mountain bike. We need bikes that can go to people of color, that can go to immigrants, that can go to people that need them the most, and we need to stop selling them, ridiculously stupid 47-pound bikes out of department stores that fall apart. We can make a really good bike that could hit the market for under $100. So I really think you look at mainstream sponsorship, when they look at what you are, and you're not hitting, your racing is not hitting a millennial market, it's not hitting any markets of color, any markets in major, mean statistical areas or metro areas, I think they're going to pass. There will always be the tough mudders and the trendy things, but we want to have a sustainable product.
So let's look at golf for a second. Golf, of course. Now, my father played golf; it was very elite in those days. But then Tiger Woods came along, and this whole junior golf program came along, and suddenly you see children everywhere. They have the, what is it, putt drive, whatever, tournament for kids all over the country now. What would it take to have those kinds of things happen at that level? I know what's SRAM's big African?
World Bicycle Relief?
Yeah, WBR. Why can't WBR happen right here in at home? We're part of the world.
Well, it's interesting you say that. We have a great program in Massachusetts called Bikes Not Bombs, which was started during during a lot of Central American components, where we started sending bicycles to Nicaragua, and then it spread worldwide. They send bikes all over, but the problem is they're really not doing well because of corruption and tariffs and things like that. We do need something like that right in the States. And it's a vocational program. It is an introduction program. So I totally agree with you. I do believe that we're looking at one of the issues, and this is where I'm going to take some heat. I believe that we have some very proper, very well-intentioned folks that they often say that we can't talk race excitement or lightweight bikes because these kids are so poor that we can't talk like that to them. So we have to give them something that they build and earn a bike program. These are all really, really, really good. But we also have to provide aspiration to people.
Right.
The auto industry, you're lucky to get a set of floor mats out of them. They don't discount. They keep that aspiration high, and people do whatever they can to get to a car. Look at how unimportant cars have become to white teenagers in America, but how super important they remain with immigrant teenagers because those families still aspire to have that. And you can't discredit that. We need to make bicycles aspirational, not a compromise, not a this is just a holding pattern until I get my real dream. So this is why I think racing is really, really, really important to youth democracy. No 15-year-old kid wants to come out and see a guy with a reflective vest and a beard eating a spread-out sandwich talking all about climate change.
Right.
Right. At least I didn't.
No.
So that's why racing could be really cool. There's
it
a reason
could be.
Why voter, that's like cars investing, motor sports. It's sexy. And that's not to say we don't have virtues and values that we uphold. But to go back to that, one thing we are doing at KMC CrossFest is we have a high school single speed race, one gear. So if you happen to be the son or daughter of a plastic surgeon and you show up with a full-on DI2, carbon fiber bike,
you can't race.
Yeah, you got one. No, you can race. You get one gear.
Oh, that's so cool. How do you, what do you do, so, lock it out?
Yeah, you just lock it out. You have to get pedal members or you pull the battery.
That's
and
awesome.
If you are a poor kid, like we helped to start this program, and we really just got out of the way. Ed Raff and a great guy, some great people in Providence, started this single-speed program for high school kids. You can get a single-speed cross bike for $250, you know, $300, bake sale. We're talking like a single bake sale can buy a bike. And that kid, if he's a pretty good athlete, is going to hold his or her own. And what's great is that then you take that bike and you just swap out the tires at the spring and you run a crit on them or, you know, some introductory high school road races like that. So there's nothing wrong with mountain biking. It's just it's got a barrier to entry. And show me any industry that can operate with, you know, what, 50% of the market.
Right.
We want we want people of color. We need people of color.
We do. We need everybody.
Yeah. Right. I know, and when you think about it, what when you talk about sponsorship, who's going to touch a brand that's all white and old?
That's true. So, that's true.
So it's kind of funny. Racing needs advocacy.
Now you've got my brain going as, okay, who could be a really good sponsor for cycling on that level? And I can't think of anybody right off the top of my head.
I think health insurance. I think health insurance is a stakeholder, and I think they should be all over this.
That's true. That's true. You know, here in Ohio, we have this event called Pelotonia. And, you know, you have the Pan Mass Challenge and we have Velosano. They have such huge barriers to entry to doing the event. It's insane. And yet,
yeah.
I know that they're all sponsored by big hospitals, big, you know, health institutions. They could take some of that money and let it trickle down into a much more, I think, important part of our sport.
Well, I think the charity, ride market is important. I think it was the bank robber Willie Sutton that said, you know, why do they when they ask him why do you rob banks? He's like, that's where the money is.
Right, that's true.
So there's a lot of symbiosis between, you know, medical research and pharma and biotech and, you know, health insurance. It's a good story, and those rides probably do more. I would say that those rides end up preventing more cancer than they cure, and I'm not discounting what they do.
Oh, no, I think prevention is an important thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do agree. We have too many barriers to entry, and we have a lot of barriers are based in transportation. You have to look at where facilities are, where we build things, where we build bike paths, bike lanes. Bike share is a really exciting thing. And honestly, even though I'm exhausted, even though I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to, you know, KMC is going to come off this year despite a $100,000 reduction from where we were in 2015 in sponsorship revenue. We will still persevere, but despite, you know, my aching spleen and staring at an Excel spreadsheet, I believe. I've never been more optimistic about cycling due to a number of things. Bike share is taking off, I would say.
Except at the White House.
Yeah, except for...
I'm sorry.
It's hilarious. and I think e-bikes are really going to play a role in a lot of your...
Yeah, me too.
You know, listeners may disagree, but I think we're dealing with disruptive things, and I think it's the advent of the rail trail movement is really starting to gain momentum. It's reaching a critical acceptance and a cultural acceptance. I think these other technologies are going to come on, autonomous vehicles, e-bikes, bike share, and everything's starting to swirl. So I've never been more confident. I think the next 5 to 10 years are going to be ridiculously interesting. I also think the business model is going to change dramatically. I think you're going to see one half the number of brick and mortar bike shops that we have now that are going to survive. But I do believe that those bike shops, if they are to survive, they each should have 3 or 4. They should have a fleet of Sprinter vans to provide mobile service to make sure that we can go to those transit stations, those farmers markets. We need, you know, what we need sometimes is not just bikes. In what we call shop deserts, we need pumps and brake cables and brake pads. I took some grief because I did a Facebook post without a helmet the other day. Oh, my God.
I saw it. Jeez. You know what? People need to get a life. It is about way more than that. I'm sorry. It's a personal choice, and I'm not going to be the one to say you must wear a helmet. That is just – it's like, you know, it used to be seatbelts were a personal choice. Well, now they're law. If it's not a law, it's a personal choice, and I think you're allowed to have that.
Well, and I think, you know, I will say this job has blown my window shades open of my knowledge of cycling. And I was at a CICLA VIA doing a lot of work with kids in Lawrence, which is a hurt immigrant community. But they have this wonderful street festival. And I met all these people. And the person that was supposed to show up for – I was doing a bike rodeo, and there was supposed to be a person show up to do the helmet giveaway. Person didn't show up. So they said, well, you can't run the bike rodeo. They don't have helmets. So think about this. And I looked out at this kid. I'm like, helmets? This kid doesn't have brake shoes. I mean, he doesn't have cables. This kid doesn't have air in his tires.
Right.
So
right.
I said, look, if these kids are going to ride with what they wrote down here, they're going to ride tomorrow with what they've got. We might as well make sure they know what side of the road to ride on, how to use signals. I'm giving away reflective straps. I'm doing, you know, whatever I can. We gave away all the lights we had. But it's like, at least let's teach them how to ride.
Right.
With or without a helmet. Because by the time you're using the helmet, we've got it backwards. It's trying to say, well, before we learn how to fly, let's just make sure you're wearing a parachute.
Right, exactly.
Well, great.
Exactly. It's all putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
All right, Richard, you get back to your best buddies.
All right.
I will see you next month at the Builder's Ball, I hope.
That'll be fun. I look forward to seeing you there, and we'll show you a great time. Boston is a great city, and the Builder's Ball is going to be fantastic.
It will be. And thank you so much for taking so much time to talk with me. It's always a fascinating conversation.
Love your show.
Talk to you later. Okay, bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Richard Fries joined me from Best Buddies out in California at the Four Seasons, having a good time, although obviously his brain just keeps on keeping on. We need to take a break. We will be right back. You are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Richard Fries joined me from the Four Season Resort in California, where he's tuning up for a Best Buddies ride, as you heard. I always appreciate his perspective and find him to be one of the most on-point folks in our business. I hope you enjoyed our show this week. A big thank you to both Richard Fries and Patrice Martin. My guest next week is easily one of the most interesting cycling experts in the business. His work is read, reread, digested, and reread again. Oh, yes, and again. I hope you will join me when I welcome Jan Hein for a full hour of cycling talk. Hope you have a great week. Stay safe out there. And remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.